Welcome to Parents Perspective. I set the table all by myself, crowed 6-year-old Andrea. Want to see? Her mom put down her ladle and went to the doorway. Great job, she smiled at her daughter, and then began to count the places. Don't we have one too many? And why is that cushion in the chair at the far end? Andrea wrinkled her forehead and looked up at her mom. That's Gramps. Oh. Her face fell and she looked down at the floor. Her lower lip trembled. Andrea's mom put her arm around her. It's okay, sweetie. I miss him too. They stood together quietly for a few moments. You know, Andrea's mom began, even though Gramps isn't with us anymore, we can still have this special time with the family. Are you still going to make Gramps' favorite cranberry dish? Of course, her mom grinned. And can we still play Gramps' funny hiding game? Sure, her mom responded. Andrea sighed. Well then, I'll try to have a good time too. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about rituals for family continuity? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest today has been working with families for a long time. Erica Berger is a licensed clinical social worker in Washington, D.C. and Maryland with more than 17 years of experience. She works as a child and family therapist at Alvord Baker & Associates in Maryland, as well as at the National Center for the Treatment of Phobias, Anxiety, and Depression in Washington, D.C. Her areas of specialty include anxiety, depression, family communication, family transitions, adolescent development, adjustment to illness, and bereavement. She has worked with children and families coping with disabilities, trauma, chronic or life-threatening illness, and losses related to September 11, 2001. Erica has also spent many years offering consultation and supervision to clinical social workers. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Erica.
Thank you. It is my pleasure to be here.
For everyone who says, I hate rituals, why can't we just do things naturally? How would you respond?
I'd start by saying that often rituals start naturally. You know, in my family, at some point along the way, my grandfather put a baby on the table on their first birthday, wrapped the baby's legs around the cake, and put the baby's hands in the cake and let the baby go to town. And that became something that we did on first birthdays in my family. And when I think about it, it has a lot of meaning for me. I think about my family as fun, as embracing of children and babies, and very much embracing of chocolate, specifically chocolate cake. But probably most families are doing rituals every day that they're not necessarily thinking of as rituals.
Like what?
Like what they do when dinner happens. For the most part, people have a specific space or a place where they sit for dinner. That's part of a ritual and also gives a sense of membership to the family that I have my place at the table. That's a ritual that most people wouldn't think about, but is very meaningful to kids, as given in your example, that Grandpa's chair was there, but Grandpa was not, very significant for children. So the other thing that I would say is that rituals give you a lot of benefit for your effort. And so even though there is some effort involved, generally speaking, kids and families are getting so much from the rituals that the effort feels worthwhile.
What kind of benefit are you thinking of?
It provides a tremendous sense of comfort and security for children. Anything that is repeated gives children a real sense of grounding. Like, this is what we do. This is something I can count on. The other thing is that it just generates wonderful memories that anyone who sits around and talks about their family from when they were growing up thinks generally about some of the rituals and some of the wonderful memories they created together.
When one of my children was in fifth grade, they were asked to write a little piece about how Thanksgiving worked in their family. Well, in our family, we have a gazillion people who come from all over the country. It started in my husband's family long ago. But I didn't realize how much of a ritual a lot of it was until I read what this child wrote in the fifth grade. And he had come down to even, oh, there was a group of Scrabble players, and there was a group of people who went to the museums and all this kind of stuff. And I had no idea that this was something that he saw as,
you know, it happened year after year after year.
Football watching. Yes, absolutely. That there are details that kids will remember that have tremendous meaning for them. And actually that they have the urge to carry on as they go. The other thing is that rituals can really solve problems. If kids are having trouble falling asleep at night, creating bedtime rituals can ease them into sleep in a different way. You know, families where a parent will sit and read to a child or even sit and write down all their worries and thoughts and put them in a notebook that they then put in a drawer so that the child can kind of separate from all the things that they're worrying about and ease into sleep. These are all just lovely ways of helping kids to solve the problem of falling asleep. In addition to that, we can teach skills to kids through rituals. You know, I learned the little amount of cooking I know. I learned by cooking with my mom or watching my grandmother. And those were part of family rituals. We're preparing the meal. You know, rituals can also make changes manageable. You know, when a couple comes together to get married, it's a huge change for each individual and for the entire family. And so the ritual of creating a wedding and everything that happens leading up to the wedding with the engagement party and showers and everything that happens the weekend of the wedding where families start to spend more time with each other helps them ease into that new period of life where these two people are now a couple.
How would you advise people to go through those kinds of tense times?
I would say that the key is to keep some things the same and to embrace some things being different. So, for example, when a couple comes together and plans their wedding ceremony is often the first challenge because each family has traditions that they want to honor in the wedding ceremony. And so if there's a way to be able to carry in some of what each bring to the table, but for each to be able to also embrace the other is the key. His rituals need to have some continuity, meaning they stay the same over time, but they don't need to remain exactly the same to stay alive. In fact, rituals do better if they grow and change along with families.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on rituals for family continuity.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Erica Berger about rituals for family continuity.
In crisis times, how can rituals be helpful?
Crises are such a natural time for rituals to arise. And part of that is I think people really have the instinct to give meaning to the moment. So, for example, when there's a loss in a family, funerals are certainly one of the most concrete examples of a ritual that helps us to contain our feelings or to express our feelings, maybe is a better way to say it. But in addition to that, for children, we can help create rituals that are meaningful for them. Not all families include children in funerals, but you can certainly do a balloon release with little notes on the ends of the strings to the person who's passed away that you release into the air. Or I have seen families who light candles together to share positive memories about the person who's passed on. And another one is if someone in the military is deployed. Rituals are really important in terms of saying goodbye. You can create rituals to make little mementos or pictures for each other to send off during the separation. Rituals for staying connected. You know, during Skype or phone conversations, kids can say a hi and a hello from the week or a wish and a worry from the week as a standard ritual that they would do when they connect. And also rituals for welcoming back, you know, throwing a special party and walking around the house and saying hello to every part of the house. Hello, table. It's nice to be back. You know, especially for small children, that's a lovely ritual to help welcome back. Even new babies can create a crisis in a family. And for children who are going to be older siblings, especially if it's for the first time, helping create rituals where they will have involvement with the baby. For example, just something as simple as kissing the baby's forehead before the baby goes to sleep for a nap is a lovely ritual that gives the older sibling a purpose and a role, helping read to the baby, you know, helping care for the baby. All of those rituals help a sibling find their role as an older sibling. Divorce is another time where rituals are really important to keep in mind, because if some rituals can be kept the same, even though there will now be two homes instead of one, it would be very comforting for children if some things stay the same, like their bedtime ritual or their morning routine, or even creating new rituals at the time of divorce so that there's maybe a special handshake to say hello and goodbye to each parent can be very helpful.
What types of rituals are especially meaningful to children?
Anything that's predictable and stable is very helpful for a child. But second of all, children really need connection with their parents. And so in terms of thinking about what's most meaningful for them, often it's time with their parents. So play dates, for example, between parents and children are a lovely ritual. And it doesn't necessarily mean they have to leave the house. They can pick a part of the house where there are things to do, let the child take the lead, and spend one-on-one time, one parent with one child, just to tune in and help that child feel like they really are something special for that period of time. Having regular Friday night dinners to welcome the weekend and say goodbye to the week can be a lovely ritual. Having Saturday morning pancakes every week, something that simple. I think you had mentioned when we were speaking earlier about sushi on Friday nights. Something that has a regular weekly feel to it is very nice. Taking family photos in the same place every year so that there's some continuity and also some change. Or you mark your height as you grow is also something that kids tend to think back about with fond memories.
I was talking to a grandmother not long ago who was having her grandchild over for part of the weekend, and she said, oh, I've got to go to the store and get a special kind of bread that that child likes because he expects to have that on Saturday mornings and look forward to.
For children to be able to know what to look forward to is just so paramount in their ability to get excited about what's coming, feel secure with what's coming, and kind of organize themselves around what's about to happen.
Is it because kids realize that they're really not in charge, and so the rituals give them a sense not only of predictability, but of the stability of what's going on in a world where they can't always predict what's going to happen?
That's key, is that we live in a world that we can't keep stable and predictable all the time. That's just not our goal, is to teach children that the world is always going to be predictable and stable. But if we can create as much stability and predictability at home as possible, it gives them a safe haven and a feeling of some degree of control because they have a sense of what's coming.
How do we know what kinds of rituals to include in our everyday lives with the kids?
If you pay attention to what your children take to, then that can be your guide to what to repeat day to day. Sometimes these things happen by accident. For example, my dad, when he used to put us to bed, would kiss us goodnight, but he would also put a hand on either side of us and sort of push the bed up and down. We clearly liked it, and then he repeated it. So some ideas for day to day is wake up kisses and hugs. Putting notes in children's lunch boxes, just to let them know you're thinking about them. Family dinners are key. There's a lot written about family dinners. There's just so much benefit. There was a family I worked with, and the children created this, by the way, that they would ring a bell. The children would all wait in the doorway to the kitchen. It would be silent. The children would come in, sit down at the table, and it would be quiet until the prayer that started the family meal. They did that out of a concern that their family dinner sort of felt like this rush to the table and grabbing the food and then finishing without really connecting. So they created a way for family dinners to have a nicer beginning and then a nicer feel throughout.
Can you also have a ritual that involves children participating in the chores leading up to something like the family dinner? It would be so-and-so's job to set the table.
Absolutely. Children will often advocate that you switch it up so that they don't end up doing the same chore indefinitely. But yes, including children in the whole process of a family meal is a really nice way to prepare them for their future and also to give them a sense of investment in what's happening, because they've helped to create what's at the table. They feel more investment in what's going on once they're sitting there.
I have a grandson who's 22 months old who knows his bedtime ritual quite well. And now that he can speak beautifully, he will tell you if you forget something. And there are two songs that have to be sung after the reading of the books. Before he actually gets in his crib, you have to sing two songs. As soon as you start, He relaxes into your arms, and he knows in a minute I'm going to be in my bed.
Right.
It's adorable.
Music is a wonderful way to enhance a ritual. Even you had mentioned something about helping getting ready for dinner, but I was thinking about cleanup. And I met a family once that puts on the radio when they're cleaning up, and they play rock music. And while they're cleaning up, the family all kind of dances around and does their cleanup. But you could do that daily. When it's time to clean up after doing something, you could make it fun with music. And music really sort of cues kids into what's happening if you use it regularly.
Are there certain types of rituals that can resonate with kids during special occasions, especially when there's a lot going on, when there's extended family or friends, or maybe when there's even some tension connected with it?
So really anything that helps children feel a sense of belonging to their families and communities is helpful for kids. So thinking about attending religious gatherings together or even community festivals gives kids a feeling of connection to a group larger than themselves, which is very helpful for them. The other thing that's nice in terms of special occasions is involving as many family members as possible in the ritual. So, for example, I heard this great idea about taking a tablecloth and permanent marker, and every year at Thanksgiving, everyone signs a section of the tablecloth that they were there, so that if you have the tablecloth for 20 years, you can look back and see who were the members of our family that were part of our special holiday tradition. Or another family I know made quilts for special occasions. So when a couple got married or someone passed away, they would make a quilt by each person in the family making one square and decorating it. And then they would have someone put it all together into a quilt. So there was literally a way for the people who were being honored or celebrated to be wrapped in the family love in a way that was very meaningful. Grateful boxes at Thanksgiving. Having everyone write down something they're grateful for and put it in a box and then reading it out loud. Or for birthdays, to have a box where everyone writes something special about the birthday boy or girl and then read them out loud during the time that you're singing and saying happy birthday. Just anything that can help involve as many members of the family as possible. And last but not least, if children can be involved in creating rituals, it makes special occasions more meaningful for them. So if they can come up with ideas about how to make grandma's birthday special, it would be great to ask them because they often come up with things we would have never thought of. Or making their own anything, to be able to do something that they made themselves to contribute to the moment is very nice. And I guess the last thing I would add to that is that families are often not in the same location these days, that families are often in different states, in different countries. And so families can do the same exact thing at the same time and feel connected to each other. So at 4 o'clock on Christmas, we're all going to blow a kiss into the air. And we'll know that everyone in our family around the world is doing the same. Or in preparation for this holiday, we're all going to bake a pie at the same time. You know, it's not necessarily true that you have to be in the same place in order to participate in a ritual together.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on rituals for family continuity.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Erica Berger about rituals for family continuity. Erica, how can we keep rituals meaningful if we need to also keep them constant?
I think we should maybe make a distinction between rituals and routines. Routines need to be constant. They need to be happening repeatedly so that they become a habit. So, for example, brushing our teeth is something we should do in a constant way. Our dentist will be happy with us. But in addition to that, it's just making it easier for us to remember to do it if we do it constantly. Rituals, however, can happen once and still be a ritual. Some people will only have a wedding once in their lives. It doesn't need to be constant to be meaningful. The other thing is, for rituals that do happen repeatedly, there are a couple of ways to just make sure that they remain rooted in the family. One is communication. So telling the story of how the ritual began to the younger generations who may not know. So in my family, I think probably everybody knows that babies on their first birthday put their hands in the cake. But not everybody may know the story of how that started. And when you tell the story of how something started, especially to children who love stories, they can really connect to it in a different way. The other piece is commitment. Parents can show a real commitment to the ritual and bring a positive attitude and some enthusiasm. They set the tone for their children. And all of us know this because we know if we have a project to do and someone comes in and says, this is going to be a pain, you know, it sets the tone. Whereas if someone comes in and says, okay, I'm fired up, let's get started, it tends to have an effect on us. And parents can have a tremendous effect on children by just demonstrating positive commitment to the ritual. And the last is continuity, is to really keep enough pieces the same that there's a sense for children of some connection to the past and some connection to the future. So they know, so we're doing the same thing that grandmom did when she grew up. Yes, this is the same thing grandmom did. And when you have grandchildren, they might be doing exactly the same thing you're doing right now. That for children tends to feel very exciting, but also comforting, that they're a part of something that has continuity over time.
I've got one grandchild who's 4 years old, and he's been sort of obsessed off and on with, you know, I'm daddy's mommy and that kind of thing. Daddy used to be little. That's kind of a little scary and a little sort of nebulous and so on. And I think when you do something that has been done, it's sort of another sense of the line of time, which I think is very difficult for children to try to grasp.
What you're tapping into is the idea that children really need help to develop their identity. Who am I with respect to other people? So I'm the son of my dad, and you're the mother of my dad. And I have a brother who I'm the brother to, and I have a friend who I'm a friend to. In order to get a sense of who they are and their identity, often rituals can just be helpful in them organizing that idea. So Mother's Day and Father's Day are a great example. On Mother's Day, we are very much reminded that this is my mom who cares for me, and that on this day I'm going to honor her because I'm her child. So breakfast in bed or breakfast out of bed, I don't think moms care. You know, and Father's Day, to be able to make something for your dad, helps kids to really get rooted in who am I to him.
Now, how can rituals grow and change to keep up with the needs of the family if we're concerned with being sure that we're doing the same thing that's been done?
That's true. We can't ever keep anything exactly the same. And if we try, we end up getting frustrated. So there needs to be some change. So if we think about two examples, one is if a new family member joins, and that could be through marriage, or it could be because there's a new baby born or an adoption. When a new family member joins, embracing their energy and ideas is one way to keep rituals alive. So you might have mentioned Thanksgiving earlier and having a new dish or keeping an old dish for grandpa, I think was the story at the beginning. If someone new comes to the family and brings a new dish to the table, as long as some of the dishes are the same, the new dish is a welcome addition. And if families can see it that way, they can create rituals that grow and change with new members. By the same token, when there's a loss, it can be very helpful for kids to get used to and express their feelings about a loss if there's some ritual created to acknowledge the person who's gone. So it might be that at a special family meal that always included this person, that there's a moment of silence where everyone thinks about that person together, or that there's candlesticks used that belong to that person, that you can add to a ritual by acknowledging someone who's gone, and that helps actually keep it alive and representing what's happening in the family.
Erica, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to pursue some of these issues further?
Well, the first one I would recommend is a book. The book was written by Meg Cox, and it's called The Book of New Family Traditions, How to Create Great Rituals for Holidays and Every Day. Another book was written by Lang and Nayer, and it's called How to Bury a Goldfish and 113 Other Family Rituals for Everyday Life. There are also several websites where families can go and just type in family rituals. One is www.education.com. Another one is www.babycenter.com. And the last one is www.directionjournal.org. All three, if you type in family rituals, will bring up an article or two that talk about the benefits of family rituals and also provide ideas.
Well, this has certainly been very beneficial to all of us and everybody who's looking at big family gatherings or anything important in their family, I think can take a lot from this whole discussion about rituals. So, Erica Berger, thank you so much for being with us today.
It has been a joy. I've enjoyed it very much.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 454 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from Helen and Norman Camero. At the end of our program, we often thank individuals or organizations for generous donations that help with the cost of producing Parents' Perspective. Parents' Perspective Incorporated is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Donations can be made online through GiveDirect or iGive.com or MissionFish at eBay. Or you can send a check or money order to Parents' Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015. Thank you for helping us continue to work for you. Our sound engineer is Mark Vitelli. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.